Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Have you dealt with ableism or segregation even due to your own neurodivergency? Well, my next guest, Raquel, has done such that. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage as we dive in and talk with Raquel. See you there. And welcome back to another episode of Inside Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with my guest, Raquel. Welcome to the show, Raquel.
Thank you for having me.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and we'll get started.
Sure. So my name is Raquel. I'm 36 years old. I was diagnosed about a year ago. And I'm a content creator. I'm a digital marketer. And yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at right now.
So you were diagnosed last year?
Yes, a little, last year. Yeah, I always mix up the dates because I got my diagnosis a year after my son. So I'm always confused, like, was I diagnosed 2 years ago, 1 year ago? But it was a year ago, yeah.
So what was it like being diagnosed, being like the female on the spectrum?
Well, the diagnosis definitely brought like a whole new level of self-acceptance. Like it really, really helped me, look back without judging myself so much anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I got my answers for many of the things that I didn't understand, for many of the things that maybe I didn't like, et cetera, et cetera. So being a woman on the spectrum is definitely an experience that some people may not understand, because sometimes we mask and we tend to imitate or mimic what other women around us are doing. Mm-hmm. So we kind of go under the radar. That's why many of us are late diagnosed, or I know some women that are diagnosed when they are 47, 52, like really later in life. But it's important to, identify as an autistic when you are autistic, because it brings you a lot of peace. That's how I see it.
Now, what is the support system like out there in Switzerland? Are they very comforting? Are they understanding?
In my experience, people, for instance, the educational system tends to go towards segregation more than integration. So the teachers really aren't prepared. And many people can't believe it. Like when I say this in Mexico, they are like, oh, no way, but it's Switzerland. Yeah, but yes, that's how it goes. Like ableism is everywhere, like in every country. So yeah, teachers aren't prepared. People, they don't really know a lot about autism. Like they have this idea, like the little boy who can't speak and does a lot of stimming and such. But they don't really know what it means. They just think it's like a disability, and they think it's the same. Well, it is a disability, but they confuse it with intellectual disability most of the time. So yeah, people, they aren't necessarily rude, but they also don't know what autism means. So yeah. It's weird.
No, you mentioned ableism. Now that's the question that I've been wanting to ask you is when was the first time you've encountered that on your own or with family, and how do you deal with it?
Well, before my diagnosis, or even before my son's diagnosis, I didn't even knew that word existed. Like, I thought it was just maybe discrimination, but I didn't know there was a word to name oppression and violence and discrimination against disabled people. So it definitely shows that unless you are related to someone who's on the spectrum or to someone who's disabled, you don't know. Like, it's everywhere, but nobody sees that, right? Before being diagnosed, I definitely encountered ableism, but I didn't know it was. But now what I can remember is, you know, this pressure to perform in an allistic or neurotypical way, mm-hmm. right? In terms of work, like I could never attain a job for more than 2-3 years. That was the most that I lasted. And now I know it was because I had a lot of accommodations, right? That I didn't know were accommodations, but I was so happy at that job because I could make my own hours. I could go to the office or I couldn't. Like there was a lot of freedom. And the communication was really open and everything was written and all these accommodations that you need at work, but I didn't know I needed them, but I was so happy there and I didn't know why I was so happy, but now I know why. So in terms of of ableism, yeah, this pressure to perform and this, and you know, to have a job and to hold a job and all those things. Also, yeah, like I never knew why I was like so tired all the time, why it took me longer to like recover after any social event, be it from work or with family. I was like drained afterwards and I couldn't never understand why. And people would say like, yeah, like you disappear or you are cold or you are like all these ideas. And it really hurt me like in my self-esteem because I didn't know why I was like this, right? And like I said, it's all those expectations that the society puts on us. And then after being diagnosed, I communicated my diagnosis with my family and the people that I meet oftentimes. So I did it via WhatsApp because like I didn't know how to communicate it you know, orally or verbally. And one person told me like, yeah, that's why. No, she said, yeah, you and your whole family are autistic or have autism, you know? And yeah, you are all weird. And yeah, that's why you hurt me so many years ago. And I was like, what? Like, yeah, like, maybe I was a shitty person. I don't know. Maybe I still am, but that has nothing to do with being autistic, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it hurt. It definitely hurt. But I was like, okay, this person doesn't know anything about autism. So I worked through it with, you know, my community of people that I've met online, and yeah, it definitely helped me like overcome that. But yeah, you know, and the things people say, like for my son, one person gave us, me and my husband, they gave us a book about a cure for autism and these therapies. And, you know, it's really like, well-meaning people, like they have great intentions, but their impact is hurtful and they don't know. And you don't know what to do because this person, for instance, she's an older woman. She's like 80 or so. So it's like, I don't think she will understand even. I mean, even if I try to explain to her, she may feel like we are attacking her, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, that's the kind of thing that, yeah, I still encounter every day.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, there are people out there who think there is a cure for autism, but there really isn't. I mean, there is no cure. And nowadays, if someone would come up to you today and say, would you get rid of your autism? What would you say, yes or no?
I would say no, because that's what makes me unique. Like everyone's unique and everyone has their own thing, right? Mm-hmm. But if I wasn't autistic, I wouldn't have like this interesting, you know, this interesting like passions, right? I couldn't focus as much in my passions as I would like, right? It would be maybe something that wouldn't bring me joy. So for me now, no, I would say no, I wouldn't get rid of it because it helps me a lot. Like, yeah, it is a disability. And sometimes, yeah, I'm really tired and I really struggle emotionally, especially. I go to therapy. Like, there are a lot of things that I still need support with. Like, for instance, eating or drinking water. I could spend days without drinking water, and that's not healthy, right? And for eating, I need people to remind me that, hey, let's eat, right? So people think because I speak to the camera and I can use the computer or the microphone that I don't need accommodations and that I don't need support, but I do need a lot of support. It's just different from what other people need.
So those are some of the issues. What other issues do you face being on the spectrum? I mean, that sounds like you would be considered, what, a level two?
Yeah, and it's funny because my diagnosis says level one, but that makes no sense because, yeah.
To be reminded when to eat, when to drink.
Yes.
It's like your executive functioning is there, but there is no reminder in your head saying, hey, you got to drink, you got to eat.
Exactly. Like I hyper-focus a lot on things, and I could spend a lot of time without eating, drinking. Also, I have this like rumination, like these thoughts going on and on in my head. I can focus on things that can hurt me emotionally. Like, I hurt myself emotionally if I focus on some thoughts, right? So yeah, I definitely think my biggest struggles come from the emotional side. Like, from emotionally, I could say I'm definitely on level two. Like, of course, I disagree with all this leveling because, as you can see, for some things I'm level one, for other things I'm level two. But when I'm on a burnout, like, I don't even leave my bed. Like, I'm in bed all day with my curtains closed. So people could say, oh, then she's level three on a bad day. Like, I have situational mutism. So it's like, it really is a spectrum, and it really is like, I would say it's like a dynamic disability. Maybe yesterday I was able to eat, but today I wasn't. Maybe tomorrow I won't be able to eat either, or maybe I will. Like, it depends. It really depends on the day, and it really depends on what's happening in my life. So yeah. Yeah, those are some of my struggles.
So when did you start advocating for yourself?
First, I started advocating for my kid, right? So little by little, I realized, like, I really see what people mean. Like, I can really understand what people mean, right? So I started to, you know, this Instagram profile. Yeah, like 2 years ago. Yeah. And so, it was well received. I think before I had my diagnosis, people, like other autistic people, saw me like an ally. And then when I pursued, you know, my professional or official diagnosis, I was able to be even more vocal about the needs of autistic people. But I always say I'm like this autism mom in recovery, because I made a lot of mistakes at the beginning. For sure, we all do. You know, diagnosis, you're never prepared because, like I said, ableism is everywhere, but you just never see it until you get a diagnosis in your family.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I decided to open up the Instagram profile because I thought not enough people are, like, from the allistic side, when I thought I was allistic, I thought, like, yeah, there aren't many allistic people defending what autistic people are saying. And then, yeah, things evolved and progressed, and then I discovered that I was, that I am autistic too. And so, yeah, that's how things are, have evolved.
Now, do you have any hyper focuses, like things you really like, you info dump on people, things you really love?
Yes. My husband is always telling me, how do you know all these things? Why? It's so random. So my special interests or my passions, right, are like pop culture, like things that maybe people don't seem to understand or find the words, like what's the use of these things, right? Like facts about a movie or an actor or an actress. Another thing is techno music. I have people, you know, asking me, where's this party and what DJs are playing and how do they play and what's this and what's that? And I know the answers. And so people are like, well, how do you know that? Well, it's my profound interest as well. And yeah, I've had many, like I was so focused when I was a tween. I was super like a huge fan of Robbie Williams. Sorry, the singer. I had like the biggest crush and I knew all his life and it was like, yeah, but it was normal, right? Because I was 12, 13, 14. And so for my family, it was like, yeah, she's, you know, so interested in guys and or boys and, you know, she's growing up. And but they never saw it like maybe I could be neurodivergent or anything, right? It was like normal for them. But yeah, yeah.
So now, do you have ADHD as well?
No, one of my siblings does. No, actually, two of my siblings. Yeah, but I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking like maybe do I have it or maybe I'm just in burnout all the time. That's why my executive functioning is not really helping me. But yeah, my two siblings they do have ADHD.
Now, have you heard of an app called Timo?
No.
Timo can really help you with everything regarding reminding you to eat and drink. It's a visual planner for those of us who have ADHD, ASD, and it's free on the computer, and they have a really affordable monthly price if you want to put it onto your phone and sync it. And it's basically a little reminder. Basically, you create routines and you tell it when you, like you set a routine for when you want to remind you to eat dinner, when you want to drink something. I use it every day because it reminds me to get up, get dressed, brush my teeth, work on my blog, meditate, and everything else. It's really great.
Yeah, I'm going to try it. I don't know. Like, the older I get, the more support I need in terms of being reminded of doing these things. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just allowing myself to receive the help that I deserve. And that's why maybe I notice it more now than before.
Now, do you have any sensitivity issues to light, sound, smell?
Yeah, definitely smell. That's the first I noticed when me and the psychologist were working on my diagnosis. Like, definitely smell. Second, I would say light, sunlight especially. And third, I would say sound. So those are like my main sensitivities.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you able to go outside without wearing headphones, or do you need headphones to help? Like dampens the outside stimulation?
I wear headphones mostly because listening to music helps me with my social anxiety. I honestly barely leave the house. That's another thing. People think like I'm like super out there. Like, yeah, maybe I go to a techno party, for instance, because it's my special interest once or twice a month. But I barely leave the house. Like, I spend most of my days here. There are weeks where I don't even go out to pick up the mail at the, you know. So it's like that. So when I have to go out or when I want to go out, yeah, I prefer to go listening to music to help me with my social anxiety. And then, yeah, I do use it also because, you know, here on the trains, they have these announcements of the next station and it's like way too loud sometimes. And I also wear sunglasses inside the train because those lights are terrible for me. Yeah.
Now, how do you deal with overstimulation? Like if you're out or even if you're with your husband and your son and yeah. you just get overstimulated by sound and light and everything, do you need to get someplace quiet?
Yeah. Yeah, when we do go out, it's what helps me with overstimulation is bringing like steam tools or toys.
Mm-hmm.
Also keeping in mind that if we go out, maybe we go out for 2-3 hours. If I prepare myself and say it's just 2-3 hours, just 2-3 hours, then that helps me a little bit to, you know, cope. But I definitely, when I need to go, I need to go and I just leave. Like that's another thing. My friends, when I was younger, they could never understand why I always left without saying goodbye. And they were so annoyed and worried, but I was like, I'm sorry, I just need to leave. To this day, and now if I meet someone, which obviously doesn't happen very often, but if I do meet someone new and at a party or something, I just say, hey, I'm going to leave and maybe I won't say goodbye, but don't worry, like, I'll be okay. It's not about you. It's not because I dislike you. I'm just like this. Yeah.
Now, have you ever had any meltdowns before?
Yes. Yes. Especially because I just wanted to, you know, be part of events and parties, especially when I was a teenager, right? I always wanted to fit in. So part of that was going to the movies, going to parties, etc. And so to cope, I started drinking. And after drinking, many times I had meltdowns. But people took it as like maybe I'm like a messy drunk, right? But now I understand those were meltdowns. I was so overstimulated and masking and everything. And it was a huge, it was this period of time when I just couldn't find any other way to cope, to mask, except by using alcohol. So yeah, now I understand that. And after a few times of several meltdowns when I was younger, I decided to obviously drink less. And yeah, like check what kind of friendships or supposed friendships I had and, you know, try to change who I was friends with, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it was a huge process that I had to discover all by myself because I didn't know I was autistic. So if I knew, maybe I could have avoided all that shame that comes after a meltdown, right? But yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Now, do you have a quiet place where, like, say, your day is just so overstimulated, you go to, like, a special room in your house where it's specifically set for you, where the lighting is lowered and the music is calmer to help you calm down?
Definitely my room. And I ask my husband to take care of the kid when I can't do it anymore. So if any mom is out there listening to this, you know, you're not a bad mom for asking for help. You're not a bad mom if you need accommodations. Like, it is what it is. And just as our kids deserve support and accommodations, we also deserve that. We need to be okay in order to take care of our loved ones. So yeah, I definitely say, you know what? I can't right now. Like, I'm overwhelmed. So please, you know, help me. And yeah, I'm lucky enough to have someone that understands that part and supports me. And if he can't, we ask for help to my mother-in-law or my mom. So yeah, we definitely have a support system as a family.
Now, when did you come to the conclusion that Autism Speaks is not the organization everyone thinks it is?
By listening to autistic people, what they had to say, by looking at the evidence. Once you understand that disability is not something to be ashamed of, once you understand disability is not a burden to the state, a burden to the, you know, social security system or health systems, then you can see why they are, you know, Autism Speaks rhetoric is just violent and it's not what people actually need in order to achieve like total liberation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go with disability rights. It's the contrary to it.
Now, this is a two-part question. One, when did you become a vegetarian? And two, do you have any issues of eating because you are a vegetarian?
Yeah. I started like 2-3 years ago. You know, it was the worst part of the pandemic, I think. So I think it made me realize, okay, what is my part in this world? Right? What can I do to make things a little bit better? If not for me, maybe for my kid, right? Because he will be here and when I'm gone. So what can I do? And yeah, I started to look into, you know, facts and figures about the meat and dairy industry and how it affects, you know, the environment. And so, yeah, I was like, yeah, why not? Let's try it. And I started little by little. And regarding like the change, right? And yeah, that's why I started little by little, because of course I don't take change very well, so I didn't want to put extra pressure on myself. So I started with chicken, and then meat, and then pork, and then etc. So the difficult part, of course, is the textures. Textures are different when you eat tofu and tempeh and or seitan, you know, these other plant-based substitutes for meat. So yeah, that took me a while to get used to it, but I found that it's more about how you cook it. It's definitely try and error and try again. So yeah, but now I think I got it. So I'm way happier now.
Now, are you eating plant-based products as well?
Yeah, at the beginning I did, because like I said, I didn't know how to cook all these new ingredients. So I was like, okay, maybe I will start with these substitutes, and then I will work my way through the kitchen and understand how to cook the new ingredients. But yeah, that's how I started. Of course, not everyone can do it. Some of the products are expensive, some aren't. So yeah, not everyone can do it right away, and that's okay. Also, there's no pressure.
Right? I mean, it's like going gluten-free. I mean, everything non-gluten is expensive.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't tried the gluten-free diet. I haven't found that I have any kind of, you know, reactivity when I eat gluten so far. So I still eat gluten. And yeah, I don't know if I start feeling worse after I eat something with gluten, then I will definitely stop. But so far, I haven't had any problems, you know, with gluten.
Now, do you look at people differently now, knowing now that you are on the spectrum as opposed to when you weren't?
Yeah, I think before I used to compare myself a lot to other people. And it really brought me a lot of mental health issues and self-esteem issues. So now I just try to see them for who they are. Like, this person is like this. I can decide, right? I got back my agency. Like, I can decide if I want to keep meeting this person or not. I can decide what's my whole role in any relationship, be it at work or maybe new friends or whatever, or even relatives. Like, I get to decide. So I try also not to judge people as much. I was super judgy. and now, yeah, it helped me to not judge people. So just take them as they are and decide if I want to have a relationship with this person or not. And that has helped me a lot. It's less of a burden now.
Now, how do you deal with socialization in general? Say you're going to a family party. Do you have a limit to how long you and your family are there for? And then just say, I got to go. Do you explain it to them? Do they understand?
Yeah, they do understand. Like, I prefer if we plan things ahead, maybe 2-3 even weeks before, maybe a month before. And they understand that, you know, I have so many spoons. So yeah, no, they do definitely understand. They don't take it the wrong way.
And finally, where can people find out more about you?
So my Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and TikTok profiles are all in Spanish, and it's at Autismo Incondicional. So if there are any Spanish speaking people that listen to this, yeah, feel free to follow and yeah, hit me up.
And that's it, everyone. That was Raquel. And you can find out more about her from her social links, which I'll hopefully leave in the description below. Thank you, Raquel, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Miss the way things used to be. I'm no big fan of now. I must have some sweeter memories somewhere in the cloud. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Welcome to the new normal. Gonna miss all you used to be. Gonna miss all you had. Consigned to the dustbins of history, like opinions from your dad. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Talk to the freaks, you can talk to just about anybody you happen to meet. It ain't what it was, and it ain't.